Welcome to episode 109 of the Nerds Assemble podcast.
This week we'll be looking at Archer, Joel Schumacher, developments in Gamergate, and our feature this week, the return of Cult TV.
Hi, I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, a.k.a. Cookie.
And I'm Paul, a.k.a. Retroid.
As ever, you can find notes for the show over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We can also comment, find links to social media accounts, or you could just email us right now at contact@nerdassemble.co.uk, or you could tweet us at nerdspodcast. And I want to use this opportunity at the beginning of the show to say we have got our annual Halloween competition back. Hey, third year running, we've got stuff to give away to you poor saps. I say poor saps, it's actually kind of a nice, we got a bumper crop of prizes this year.
So I have to say, we love our poor saps.
Yep, we love them so much that we want to give you stuff. Unfortunately, this particular competition is open to UK residents only, aged 18 and over. It's basically going to involve doing something with a tweet, which will be available and linked to on the Hex Dimension website, but we'll have a link to that particular post on the Nerd Assemble episode write-up for this episode. But what can you win for this Halloween competition this year? Okay, we've got a bunch of films. We've got Cabin in the Woods.
Ooh.
Which is good. I like that.
An American Werewolf in London.
Classic.
Classic.
World War Z.
I liked it.
The novel Cat Out of Hell by Lynn Truss, which is the lady who wrote Eat, Shoots and Leaves, and this is a comedy horror. And we've got a Steam key for The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. That is all for first prize. And then if you're a second place runner-up for this, basically, you will get a Steam key as well for The Vanishing of Ethan Carter, but not the rest of the prizes.
A question. Can I answer this while just wearing a moustache?
No. This competition will inevitably involve the tweeting and retweeting of some stuff and following us, and Hex, basically. So, but that's okay, because you obviously want to win stuff. We are going to have, after this competition, a retweet and follow one that will be for wherever you are, as long as you've got Steam, basically, which will be for another keys for The Vanishing of Ethan Carter, but that won't be for a couple of weeks. But I just thought, because I know we've got a couple of non-UK listeners, so you might want to know about that. But news stuff. Ha! Dear Archer has had to catch up with the times and dropped the usage of a certain spy organisation's monkier.
Monica.
But then it sounds like I'm trying to say thingy from Friends, and it just doesn't sound right, whereas monkier kind of...
Monkier does not sound right
it
either.
It does sound better, or else I sound like I'm trying to be someone who's got issues with cleanliness and tidying. But the latest season of Archer that's heading this way, the spy organisation that Archer and co are a part of will no longer be known as ISIS. This is due to, even though the organisation they're trying to distance themselves from has changed its name again, they're trying to distance themselves from IS in the Middle East and all the crap those bastards have been up to,
which is kind of crazy in a way. Because, as if anybody's going to confuse the two.
I know, but if someone just, pops in and...
people say, it's like the terrorists have already won, blah, blah, and it's like, yeah, but it's a bit disrespectful. What if you've got family members of the recent victims from over there watching the show? They're not going to want to hear the name.
True.
Yeah, they're not.
And it's a fun series. It's a comedy.
Yeah.
They're just wanting to avoid any kind of association like that, because the entire idea of, you know, ISIS in the first place was that it was a sort of a spy soundy name.
Yeah.
But these bastards come along and, you know, start executing people. I was reading today that they executed an Iraqi journalist.
Oh, lovely.
Mm. Yes, just today. So it's like, yeah, you don't really want to do anything that has, you know, any association. It's like, with them doing Vice, you know, Archer Vice last series, it gives them a chance for a clean break. They can come back and there can be something else.
It's looking like Archer and Co are going to be merging with the CIA as to what.
Interesting.
I think that's what I saw in the articles I was reading around.
It does make me wonder about just basically tweeting Archer quotes. Just to, yeah.
It could get interesting.
Hashtag ISIS.
Yeah, I would, listeners, I would advise against doing that at the moment.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't.
I mean,
that's not a good idea.
At the same time, I'm just trying to imagine, like, if, American Dad had come up with a similar problem. I can't imagine Seth MacFarlane's lot be willing to be respectful.
It's an interesting thing, because, I mean, what would happen if, you know, a terrorist group came up with, you know, we are the CIA, or something like that? It's like,
I still don't understand how they ended up with an acronym that can be pronounced as ISIS in the first place, considering that that's also the name of an Egyptian goddess. You'd have thought that they might have thought, because they obviously had English speakers among their number, that's how they've managed to recruit so well from non-Middle Eastern countries. And it's like, well, surely you would have thought, hey, wait a moment, this sounds like the goddess name of an infidel religion. But moving away from less dangerous political stuff, there's more for that later, don't worry.
dangerous political stuff or more of this?
Dangerous political stuff.
Ah, fair enough.
I think it's time for us to talk about Retroid. What's your favourite word right now?
What? Oh, Bapples.
Say it again.
Bapples.
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 And what is this an amalgamation of?
Bat nipples.
Specifically, bat suit nipples. Yes.
No, not that I'm being, you know, really strange with my other, you know, non-podcast interests, but this is to do with Batman. I just want to, you know, make that clear.
Variety recently snagged an interview with Joel Schumacher, who, as we're all painfully aware of, was responsible for the direction the Batman films took in the 90s.
Oh, the shit direction.
Yeah.
Into shit.
No, it didn't happen. Piss off. Joel Schumacher had nothing to do with Batman in my timeline.
In your timeline.
Variety asked, you introduced nipples to the Batsuit. Were you surprised they became so controversial? To which Schumacher was like, yes. I was like, are you kidding me? I think that will be on my gravestone. It's how I'll be remembered. So, yeah.
No, that won't quite be what he's remembered for.
There'll just be a bullet list on his gravestone, which is like, bullet one, you bat nipples. Bullet two, something. Apples?
Baffles,
sorry.
Bring that vision into my head.
Unfortunately, they didn't manage to get out of him during the interview the logic for allowing them to be added to the suit. I mean, sure, there might be nipples there on a man in real life if he wasn't wearing some weird suit that was kind of, you know, to protect and hide their identity and their person and generalness. But I don't think Farmer managed to not have nipples on the outside of their suits.
You know,
I'm pretty sure that some people would actually like that.
Yeah, of all the issues with Joel Schumacher's Batman's, nipples on the suit is not high on my list of.
So
seriously.
At least he's actually turned around and said it was a big mistake and I shouldn't have done it, which is a fair comment. And he's I quite like the fact that George Clooney's apologised for having messed for it as well.
there were more questions which he responded to. Variety asked, your Batman movies aren't as dark as Christopher Nolan's. To which Schumacher replied, I was never able to go into the darkness. Because of Batman Returns, families have objected that it was too adult, which is no criticism of Tim Burton's. When they offered it to me, I went to Tim and said, this is your franchise and they want me to do it. I won't do it if you don't want me to, he said. Take it, please. I can't do another one. Even though Batman Forever is really sexy, it was a movie the whole family could see. End quote.
Shite. It was a sexy family film.
It was shite.
I actually didn't mind Batman Forever as much as Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin just...
the only...
Which was the one with Mr. Freeze in?
That was Batman and Robin.
Although the brilliant quote was that, wasn't there? Because Joel Schumacher, he actually commented that it wasn't... that he said that George was brilliant in it, Uma was brilliant in it, Chris O'Donnell was brilliant in it, nothing to them, and Arnold was Arnold. You can't say more than that, can you?
The films do not exist. My Batman knowledge comes principally from the Arkham games, and that's how it will remain.
And I do reckon they exist in some sort of weird hell dimension that you'd have to have like an Event Horizon ship to actually get into.
Or just, you know, like a really bad mushroom. You know, misidentify it when you're out picking.
Yeah. And you see Batman.
And it will be, oh god, I've tripped Batman Forever again.
Batman Forever is a guilty pleasure of mine to watch purely because of Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey's performances, as I've said before.
Jim Carrey was all right in it, but
riddle me this, riddle me that. Who's afraid of the back?
Okay, so do we want to know what happened when Variety asked about Batman and Robin? Come on, we want to know.
Go on.
So Variety asks, then came Batman and Robin. Was it your idea to cast George Clooney as Batman? To which Schumacher replied, no, Val left at the 11th hour to do The Island of Dr. Moreau. It changed everything. George made a noble effort. I was the problem with Batman and Robin. I never did a sequel to any of my movies, and sequels are only made for one reason, to make more money and sell more toys. I did my job, but I never got my ass in the seat right. Variety asked, why? To which Schumacher then replied, they immediately wanted a sequel, but I said yes. There's nobody else to blame but me. I could have said no, I'm not going to do it. I just hope whenever I see a list of the worst movies ever made, we're not on it. I didn't do a good job. George did. Chris did. Irma is brilliant in it. Arnold is Arnold.
Uma.
Oh, I just love that phrase. Arnold is Arnold. Bless
yeah.
You. It's like all the directors he worked with Arnold say, oh, it's just Arnold. Just let him do it. Just Arnold.
Yeah. I've seen Hercules in New York, so I know what I was in for. Except it wasn't enhanced by a shit dub.
I suppose, because I always try to remember try to figure out where the heck Joel Schumacher sort of comes from, and it's more the sort of like action movies of the 80s. He kind of like Joel Silver and that sort of started making a name for himself.
I always get those two mixed up, Schumacher and Silver.
I think when I think Joel Silver, I think Matrix. When I think Joel Schumacher, I think Bad Batman movies.
Okay.
That's how I keep them apart in my head.
And obviously you can't really confuse Joel and Ethan Coen with them. Because they do awesome movies.
Some of the films that Schumacher did were all right. I'm trying to think of the names of any of them at the moment.
I don't think I've seen any of the other ones. I'm struck. I think...
He's been a producer on a lot of stuff.
Did one of the Batmans, come out at the same time, roughly, as the Sylvester Stallone Dread?
I would have
For a second there, I thought you meant come out of the closet. I was like, what?
When did Dread come out?
They were very bright.
When did Dread come out? Because, like, Batman Forever was, like, what, 93, 94, I want to say?
Round about then, and Tank Girl as well at the same time.
Mm, it's all before 97.
I quite like Tank Girl.
Yeah. I remember I reviewed, I was doing, like, reader reviews in Comics International. And we were asked, you know, if you're going to go see these films, could you write, you know, reviews of them? And so I ended up going to see Tank Girl, the, you know, requisite Batmans, or Batman, and Dread. And I remember, you know, reading about, you know, the budget and, you know, how big budget, you know, the Batman film was. And being struck when I was watching it in the cinema, how cheap it looked in comparison with stuff like Dread.
Yeah, 1995 it came out.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense then. I mean, obviously, Tank Girl was cheap in, you know, in comparison. But I remember saying that Tank Girl was probably, you know, the best adaptation.
Because it really lived up to the sort of, like, grungy, punk kind of appearance that was in the comics.
I mean, it kind of actually used bits, I think it's the bits from the actual comics as well, to kind of interject here and there.
It appreciated the aesthetics that the comics had previously presented.
Absolutely.
It did. I still think that Tank Girl should have been just entirely animated. Because it has an animated segment right in the middle, or, you know, around there.
I think it has a couple, actually, doesn't it?
I think it does, but yeah, I would prefer an animated version. But yeah, I remember thinking that the, you know, the Batman film was just it was by far the worst of those three.
I will now give you a Joel Schumacher film that will make you think,
What? He's not shit.
Lost Boys.
Oh God. Producer or director?
Director.
Oh my God.
Wow.
What?
Nah. Yeah.
World doesn't make sense anymore.
But it's not the first time.
What the hell happened?
I mean, not the first time.
There are no, you know, neon lights or stupid assholes in Lost Boys. So what happened?
It's not the first time that a good director has made a bad film.
I think
that's very true.
I think the problem with
Michael Bay.
I think the problem with Schumacher's interpretation of the Batman universe that we got in those two films in the 90s was that he took the weird Burton Gothic of the 80s films and then perhaps got a bit too lost in Adam West's kind of style of Batman at the same time.
Adam West does not exist.
Except as the mayor of
Quahog.
Yeah, he's all right in that.
Okay. but that's what it always felt like to me. That's where it kind of...
What I find bizarre is that they've kind of tried to reboot the aesthetic with, was it Batman 66 or something?
Well, yeah, that's more the aesthetic of the Adam West Batman. Yeah.
But I think, for me, other than the acting, one of the worst things about... Well, say one of the worst things about Adam West's Batman is like the costumes and the aesthetic. It just looked quite cheap.
I don't like the fact that you get massive words like kapow springing up on screen in massive speech bubbles.
Because it was an adaptation of a comic and that was absolutely necessary.
I have a personal feeling that it was Adam West's Batman which held comics back.
Well, yeah, because obviously the Adam West series came after the Comics Code basically infiltrated comics and changed them forever in America.
Yeah.
And though I have read that there sort of came a point where obviously like, you know, the Adam West series started off and the comics were doing whatever, and then it got to the point that the TV series was so popular that in order to sell comics, they went and began making it more like the flipping TV series. And obviously it would take until, like, what, the late 70s, early 80s, in order for Batman to get the fuck away from that.
To be fair, though.
I remember watching the Batman TV series, and, of course, I was born in 75. Yeah, piss off, everyone.
To be fair, though, that kind of thing's happened quite a bit recently, where they've kind of had, you know, kind of something, and then they've kind of made a film adaptation or a, you know, kind of TV adaptation, and then that aesthetic has kind of filtered back into the comics. Like, I think, like, newer versions of the kind of rebooted universe of Star Trek, that looks like it was kind of deliberately trying to kind of draw, not Captain Kirk, but actually Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto.
Meanwhile,
yes, they have done that.
Meanwhile, if you're a fan of the Fantastic Four, then you're about to get screwed over in the coming year in comics. Well, hey! I'm assuming I'm not the only person that's heard about this.
Yeah, they're going to cease publishing Fantastic Four.
Which...
As of next March, is it?
Yeah, in speech marks, nobody knows why, other than the sales are bad. At the same time, though, it conveniently coincides with the same release period or year as Fox's new Fantastic Four film.
So the
conspiracy here is the idea that Marvel and Disney especially don't want to be giving Fox free advertising before they put this film out.
Which sounds to me like it's... Because, I mean, any entertainment product, the only reason that you do it is to earn more money than you actually spend on it. So are they basically downright admitting that they won't get as much money? They'll earn nothing back? Because, I mean, I would have thought that would have been more important, even earning a little bit back than giving free press to Fox.
The thing is, it's in Marvel and especially Disney's interest to make Fox tank again with Fantastic Four, so that Fox like, fuck it, we'll sell the rights back. Yeah. Or give up the rights to the films.
Disney and Marvel won the rights back, don't they?
Yeah.
They don't have as good a relationship as they do with Sony and Spider-Man.
I am thinking, with that, the whole, they don't want to advertise, the film for them, by doing a comic. If the sales are so bad of the comic, then that's not really going to be, the point, is it? And also, wouldn't a film coming out, wouldn't that benefit the comic?
Come on, this is weird corporate logic. How can we possibly expect to fathom this mess?
Corporate lawyers.
The other little tidbit that was going around, I've seen little screenshots of it there, and apparently in a retailer sort of conference, there's a new series coming out in January as well called No More Mutants.
Oh yeah, I saw a hint of that. Starring
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, and apparently Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are now going to be joining the Avengers once more, which has led to the demise of all new X-Factor. That's being cancelled.
I was hearing rumours that, with the Spider-Man films and such, I was hearing rumours that they're wanting Spider-Man to join the Justice League or...
No, was it the Avengers?
No, Justice League is... Yeah, I was going to say Justice League is DC, isn't it? Duh.
Wow, that'd be an epic crossover.
I saw a lot of stuff last week about that as well, and I would say that Sinister Six is 2016 slate at the moment. I can't see a Spider-Man Avengers team-up happening anytime soon, if ever, while Sony owns it.
They're talking about re-soft-spooning Spider-Man and in the new Sinister Six film, aren't they? They're making Sinister Six have to work with Spider-Man as heroes to defend the planet against another threat.
I think from one of the snippets that I read about that whole crossover thing, were they planning on basically rebooting Spider-Man again to specifically go into the Avengers?
They'd have to, because Spidey... It doesn't make sense currently in Avengers lore for Spider-Man to be existing in the same 10-year period, because it's New York.
Yeah.
But I'm going to move us on... Wait, because we've gone completely off track from Batman and his nipples.
Bapples.
Never mind.
Bapples.
Okay, so Gamergate refuses to be resolved in any sensible, coherent manner.
I think part of the problem is that everybody's getting sick and tired. Well, everybody that just basically doesn't want to get into a shouting match is kind of sick and tired of this whole Gamergate thing and just wants to move away from it.
It reached new lows. That's it. I thought that their current attempts to destroy academic discourse about video games was bad enough. No, they decided to go and harass another woman, a game developer, out of her home last week. by sending a credible death threats on Twitter to her. And yeah, this was Brianna Wu, and her husband had to call the police and leave their home. So,
which is just great either way. I mean, you know, however you look at it, and anyone, no matter what side they're on.
Apparently, prior to this happening, she'd posted a series of tweets using memes that poked fun at Gamergate and its supporters. However, sticks and stones by break bones. Mm. What? Where the heck is that logic with?
Yeah, it seems like if you're criticizing something and then you get death threats back, that's not like even progressing, you know, the argument. That's just going off the handle.
I think Ron Burgundy needs to be posted everywhere. You know.
Right, that escalated quickly.
Well, to be honest, I mean, the origins of Gamergate, that wasn't even like years ago or anything.
It was only a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
It just goes from one bit of stupidity to another. It's just, I'm just getting so sick of it. And it's not that I hate game. I just hate people that are pro. Not even hate people. I just hate the pro side of the movement that's just kind of trying to introduce things that are impossible into games journalism, like objectivity. That's not possible. These people need to read the Death of an Author by Roland Barthes, for one, which is a 1976 essay, to understand why you can't have objectivity in criticism.
I have a feeling that a 1976 essay is nearly 20 years older than most of the people who are engaging in it.
Yep, it's older than me, but, you know, I've read it. Okay, it's part of my degree, but it's just the stuff they're at saying, oh, you know, games journalism should do, and even flipping academia, and it's just like, that's not how stuff outside of science works. It's not
how the world works.
It's highly interpretive,
it's
isn't
not
it?
How,
it's an art form.
It's
that
not
you're
how
studying.
Stuff that's based, because it's a lot of games, a lot of media products, and art, it's based off of emotions and interactions, and those are not things that can be quantified and measured. Thus, you can't quantify and measure the products of these things beyond sales figures.
We were saying just the other day that, you know, you don't get this type of thing with, like, film criticism.
No,
you know, film
oh my god,
anything.
Do you know what? I can't. Do you know what happened when people started looking at objectification of women in film? People like Laura Mulvey, like, wrote this essay in the 80s that kind of was about the objectification of women in film.
She wrote it in the 80s. Does that mean it's solved now?
No, and the most important response that happened out of that was an essay by, I believe, was it Stephen Neill? Which looked at the male gaze and the male body being objectified.
Was it Richard Dyer?
Richard Dyer, sorry.
Yeah.
That's it. Richard Dyer wrote a response to Laura Mulvey's essay about the objectification of women, which looked at the objectification of men.
No, because they're obviously the same.
This is the 80s.
I'm actually using something from my film degree.
I know. You know, it's just like, it's like, and there wasn't, you know, nobody threatened Laura Mulvey with rape and her meeting an untimely end, or pursued, you know, published a flipping postal address on, I'm trying to think, it was Apronet around, yeah, Apronet would have been around that. Nobody posted her postal address on Apronet or whatever.
Well, I mean, part of the problem is that there are some people out there that are basically claiming that they've kind of faked these things in order to kind of wriggle out.
Oh, that
criticism
is one of the first responses. Yeah, it's just, oh, you know, it didn't happen, pics, or it didn't happen, which I've had, you know, said to me today.
I mean, I watched a YouTube video on kind of another debunking one from Logic Bomb, and that was kind of likening Gamergaters to conspiracy theorists. And when you kind of turn around and say, oh no, they're faking their own death threats and whatnot, that seems to me like that's, you know, conspiracy theory territory.
Well, I saw a few days ago someone, they used a term, you know, forgive me if I get the, you know, the precise term wrong, but it was something like a grateful nodder or a polite nodder. Yeah, such and such is a polite nodder. And it was, what the fuck are you on about? What the hell is that? And I looked it up, and their source for this was they'd tweeted something, and then Leigh Alexander, who's one of the targets of the Gamergate lot, had said oh, that's good, and they'd said, oh, thanks, and it was conspiracy, because look, they're talking to each other and they're being friendly. This means they're in cahoots, which means this, which means the reverse vampires are trying to get rid of the lunchtime with, in cahoots with the saucer people.
Do you know what? I've written several letters to my MP before where I heavily, heavily criticise the policy of the Conservative Party, which he's a member of. I don't think you could say we're in cahoots just because we've contacted with each other, had contact with each other.
Oh, but you are, because reasons.
What is it when you take something to an illogical, ridiculous...
Reducto ad absurdum is the Big Bang Theory.
That's what they seem to just do with everything, and it's...
Part of the problem is that, is... Basically, because this is kind of getting around that, you antagonise Game Gators, or you say anything that they don't like and they come after you, which stops people from criticising them unless,
like their own echo chamber. If you even mention it on Twitter, within a few minutes you get a few people who are either calling you a liar, calling you a shill, or a mercenary, or an ideologue, or my favourite, which is, the social justice warrior.
Mm.
Which is like, yeah, thanks very much. It's, I want everything to be better for everyone. I'm such a cunt. How could I possibly want something like that? I just don't know. All of that, and if you, some of them, if you just, talk with them, which is, my way of, moderating on Eurogamer and, just general discussion. If I talk with them, some of them are, you can agree to disagree.
Mm.
And they're fine. Others will just, no, you're disagreeing. You are the enemy. And it's like, what, seriously? It's Gamergators versus the rest of the planet?
That's the thing. Some of the language actually used kind of indicates that it's conceptually a game that they want to win, which is a bit ridiculous because you're kind of playing with people's lives there.
I mean,
it's just the false equivalence of both sides are as bad as each other, and it's like not from what I've seen, but provide evidence for that, and they just tend to if they can't instantly just answer that with a link from a website that they happen to agree with, then oftentimes they just don't.
I hate how early days and still now, they say, they've been censored, blah, blah, and it's like, there's nothing stopping you from setting up free to little cost websites, which some people have already done with that. Oh, what's that US gamer thing website that has some of the worst written reviews I've ever seen?
I will say, not US gamer,
it, the sites around, and I've seen it before. It's just but they weren't even objective either, and it did involve interpretation of the reviewer's experience with the game. And it's like, and just the stuff that they're trying to reduce games down to. Oh, graphics is the only thing. No, graphics is not the only thing that matters, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, a game can look like, from the very beginning, me and Cookie with the, we were gaming on, the 8-bit.
Mm.
Yeah.
If graphics were everything, I don't think we would have bothered at the earliest point, because, my God, playing... modern games in comparison, with what we were, we were putting up with on Commodore 64 and Amstrad CPC, and mates with Spectrums and BBC and Macros and all the rest of those. I mean, obviously, graphics are not the the everything. It's like arguing which is the best fruit or which is the best spice. It's like, I hate aniseed, but I love almonds.
I think
therefore, aniseed is terrible from the arse of Satan, and anyone who likes it is ideologically against me and needs to be crushed. Or it could just be a matter of taste.
I think part of the issue is that the people that are kind of like pro Gamergate, other than potentially a lot of them holding extremely dubious political and racial and sex and gender views that really do not belong in the 21st century.
Most of them in the 20th.
Like, they don't understand the production process behind actual sort of like entertainment products, and then products, i.e. criticism and journalistic stuff and academic stuff, and then looks at those entertainment products. They just don't understand how any of the processes really work. Some of them say that, you know, they are indie devs, and that I do believe that a couple of them might make things in their own time, and they might try to blog a bit in their own time, but they generally don't seem to understand the processes involved and how things come about, and how other art influences other art, and how the environment influences people, in the sense that an environment that I think too many people, when they think about how people are inspired, and that they don't really understand the process of inspiration, because they've never been in a position to be creators or have tried, and they just they just don't understand art or media at the end of the day.
But I think there's a topic that you were kind of encroaching on a little bit earlier on, which was basically to say that you know, there's a difference between kind of terms of service and stepping out of bounds, in essence, and censorship.
You must agree with us, or
censorship would be, so you can't post certain things on websites. Quite frankly, if you're a website based in the UK and you allow people to post things on your website that equate to hate speech, under UK and EU law, you will potentially get in trouble. If they allow people to post stuff which is libel, get in trouble. So you have to remove that, because or else you're going to end up in court.
There's the whole freedom of speech, and if you use someone's, especially if it's a commercial website, you know, someone's platform, to say these things, freedom of speech does not entitle you to post what the hell you want.
Apart from anything, absolutely, certain interpretations of copyright law say that then the comments become the ownership of the site, and then there's various obligations around moral copyright law where it's like, well, we don't agree with this, and it's our copyright, so we can get rid of it.
If you think of, platforms on the internet like houses, you're not allowed to burst into somebody's house and then say whatever you... They have the right to basically tell you to get out, in essence. You have the right to say whatever you like.
I would kind of liken websites to pubs or clubs, you know, a bit like that.
If you piss off the barman or the landlord, you're probably going to get chucked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the... You know, yes, you're entitled, you know, they want you to come in because that's how they make money. But if you do something that they don't like, it is not censorship for them to evict you.
And it's not good business sense for them to throw you out just because they disagree with you as well. It's usually you have to do something seriously wrong in order to be thrown out.
And true censorship would be, well, then you couldn't start up your own Tumblr or your own WordPress site or whatever, post what you originally said. You
know, please, by all means, go to China and do this, and then you will understand what censorship is, because your version of freedom of speech is, you know, the sort of when it comes to, you know, the UK, far more shady in this regard, but you know, freedom of speech is the government given right. It is not that your right overriding anyone else's. If you're in their space, if you're in their space, they can tell you to sling your hook. So all this, oh, we got censored on, you know, like 4chan, or, you know, they got kicked off from, you know, one particular website, which was, you know, decided to, you know, right, enough was enough. That's that website's right.
Can I also say, getting slightly more into UK politics, I do get sick of, basically, because, you know, I'm subscribed to the Lib Dem, you know, kind of Facebook page. You know, fair enough, you don't have to agree with that, I don't mind. You know,
well, I voted Lib Dem up until.
It's just the hostility towards Lib Dems on Lib Dem page. Basically, if you go and say, "Yeah, I agree with the Lib Dems" on the Lib Dem Facebook page, you get, you know, shouted down by people from like UKIP or, you know, Tories and whatnot. And it's like, how can you have something like that happening where it's meant to be like a, you know, kind of a bit like a fan page for Liberal Democrats, and you get people from outside basically just intimidating people into silence, in essence.
Meanwhile, we do not agree with the treatment of Brianna Wu at all, who was who we were originally talking about.
Yeah.
Not even in the slightest. I don't care what she did. You know, as you know, what she said.
Technically, she should, under freedom of speech, have the right to have done the meme images that she'd done.
Well, exactly.
Mm, yeah.
I just think it's an incredibly petty thing to go after someone.
If anything, that would be a form of censorship from.
Because if as soon as you, the removal of the content is not censorship. It's when you then try to follow that up with harmful actions to the individual.
Hmm.
That's censorship. Be that, you know.
When you're trying to shut somebody up, not just their message.
No, yeah. It's a justifiable crusade for justice if they do it. Whereas if anyone says, no, I don't agree with that, then they're trying to censor them.
Yeah.
I think that's how it works with, you know, any movement or, you know, political organisation. And while Gamergate might think, and some of the people in it might not be, you know, political, the gist of the whole thing is very definitely political.
And I'd say by its very nature, Gamergate is very political. It's just obviously not the political system, as it were.
Yeah, I'll say again, and this is, you know, the, you know, the final, you know, thing I'll say on, you know, the whole Gamergate thing. Anyone who's justifiably worried about ethics in journalism when it comes to, you know, all, in all this kind of thing, don't use Gamergate tags, because the whole thing started with harassment and he's continuing with harassment. It's pretty much like saying, yeah, but the Nazis weren't all bad because, you know, they did this, that, and the other. No, you don't want anything whatsoever to do with that tag. Do, you know, your, you know, your ethics, you know, push yourself or under it, you know, a different flag. But trying to make out that, you know, Gamergate is entirely lovely and it's only the, you know, the, you know, the anti-Gamergaters, you know, who are doing these kinds of things, just doesn't work because the evidence speaks for itself on this.
I'm going to move us on to a quick question we had from somebody. Somebody sent us a question. I'm looking at it right now.
What time is it?
Kevin Furlong, or at Furly Whirly on Twitter, asked us, who would you cast in a Sapphire and Steel remake, and why isn't somebody already doing it?
Can I just say, before we kind of get onto that, obviously, you know, we've got strong opinions on Gamergate, and any questions that are asked by anybody, they're obviously not kind of one side or the other on Gamergate. They're individuals, okay? So I don't want, like, any backlash against anybody.
Okay.
Did that make sense?
No, it didn't.
No, it didn't.
No.
What? Seriously?
Just, I think you need to go, or is it Adam Hills, I want to say?
Stop being a dick.
Yeah, there we go.
That was a terrible Australian accent.
It was a we weren't introduced.
That was an Australian accent?
Yeah, that was meant to be. Adam Hills, a lovely Australian comedian.
I think he's probably lost his Australian accent slightly.
He's got a twang still.
Yeah.
Okay, so who would you cast in a Sapphire and Steel remake, and why isn't somebody doing it already? Go. Because I didn't know until this question was asked what the hell Sapphire and Steel was.
Ah! I'm
awesome series.
Yes, and that's why it shouldn't be bloody remade. Leave it alone. There you go.
I'd have Thingamabob and
Thingamabob.
Yeah. Thingamabob and Ujjar. Which are
Do you actually have people in mind when you say Thingamabob?
Her name just completely you know.
But what's she been in?
Yeah.
I would basically have the original people.
Hey, right. Joanna Lumley.
Thank you.
Dave McCallum.
Yeah.
There you go.
Brav?
I
For those of us,
and why isn't somebody doing it already?
I think
because it shouldn't be touched again,
because
it was classic.
Because surely, you know, did any of us see the remake of Randall and Hopkirk?
Oh, God, no.
See, that's why there's not a remake of Sapphire Instant.
For those of us who are too young to know what the heck this is, could you explain what this series was?
What, Randall and Hopkirk or Sapphire
Instant? Sapphire and Steel. Randall and Hopkirk manages to retain a cult level that is above Sapphire and Steel.
Ooh. What?
Them's fighting words.
Actually, to be fair, been remade by Big Finish Audio.
Yeah, that's true.
But what is Sapphire and Steel?
Do you want to go, Cookie, or me?
It's to do with time travel, isn't it? In a sense.
Well, I would say also dimensions.
Alternate dimensions, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just... It was really cool, sort of sci-fi. And you can take over from there.
Fair enough. It's two agents from... it's never really said where or when or what they're from, is it? No. But, they're Sapphire and Steel. And you, throughout the series, you get other agents who are also, named after, particular, minerals or, elements. And the idea is they solve anomalies. That's pretty much the best way of putting it, isn't it? So, mysteries. Strange, abnormal anomalies and mysteries in different places, and they basically just
different realities.
Yeah, it's kind of in a way slightly Doctor Who-ish.
And there is, to me, it's sounding like the complete storyline for Final Fantasy 13-2 at the moment.
But yeah, it's
to be fair, it's like a cross between Doctor Who and the X-Files.
Okay.
Before the X-Files
came along.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You're never sure. Why they're doing it or who they are.
And that was the biggest mystery of it all, wasn't it?
I liked the enigma.
Did they actually manage to wind the series up properly? Sapphire and Steel?
Not really.
I remember something about that and them all of a sudden finding that they're the only ones in existence left or something like that.
Yeah,
Looking out of a window from a room that's kind of just in space.
I think they got stranded.
That sounds all a bit 2001: A Space Odyssey, being stranded in the room in the middle of space.
Do you reckon it's something to do with British sci-fi series? Because it reminds me slightly of Blake 7, how it's such a massive downer for an ending.
maybe we were dystopian before all this young adult kind of fiction started being turned into big Hollywood films.
What, supernatural teen romance?
I'm going to move us on to, we got a shortened what we've been up to section, and I would like to talk about briefly Doctor Who.
I really wish I could think of who to do Sapphire and Steel, but unfortunately the original actors were just too good.
Yeah, it would be very difficult to replace them.
If I did something like that, it would have to be different agents. And
maybe it could be an animated series, but just not look as scary as the new Bob the Builder.
He looks a bit, married cousins in the back
New Bob the Builder looks A, uncanny, and B, incapable of being old enough to hold a trowel in the first place.
As I say, married cousins in the back end of nowhere.
But yeah, last week's Doctor Who thoughts that haven't potentially already been said on Hex.
That haven't already been said.
Well, or you can repeat what you said on Hex, but it'd have to be shorter than what ended up on Hex.
Better than last episode.
I don't understand how they went from the... It felt like we were cheated that they went from the ending of the last episode to where they were.
Yeah.
In this episode.
I never want to see you again. Get out of my life. Bam. The TARDIS goes. Next episode. Oh, hi.
All dressed up and ready to go. I don't think she was in the teaser, was she?
No, she wasn't.
I was actually quite... I'd resigned myself to the fact that she wouldn't be in it, and I was quite looking forward to seeing Peter Capaldi just being by himself with a coach load of strangers.
I think it would have been a stronger episode for it, that they had a call-off episode.
Yeah.
Because that would have made far more bloody sense.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if the following episode from this one, if they would have had it so that, you know, he accidentally comes into her life again. And she's like, oh, what the hell are you doing here?
Meanwhile, by the end of this episode, she's all like, she's making up fibs and lies to everyone so that she can keep travelling with him. And there wasn't enough that went on in that episode to demonstrate that complete change of heart. That's just...
The comment about the doctor being addicted, and it's actually her being addicted to the dangerous adventures.
That was so throwaway.
Yeah. But there's a lot of throwaway stuff.
It's going very throwaway.
Mm.
It's
like they're trying to do things subtly, but only it's like if you don't quite hear one of the lines, then you just lost.
That's the problem with all the episodes being self-contained. I was talking about this with a friend of mine. We would like more multi-part Who stories.
If you think about it, you know, previous Who series have had at least two or three two-parters. This has had none so far.
I'm talking about weird. Real Doctor Who, not New Who.
All right.
but there were more two-parters in previous seasons. With the relaunch.
I think Who lends itself to, you know, longer storylines.
Yes, it does. Definitely.
Yeah. And it's...
Tales of Ring Chang. Canons of Ring Chang is a perfect example.
And while they're not doing a bad job, I mean, for all its, you know, faults, because, you know, long ago when I was watching Doctor Who, I learned, take off your science hat, Paul.
Yeah.
Otherwise, your science hat will be screaming in your ear, going, "What that makes no sense? Why is he doing that? This bollocks!"
To be fair, I did quite like the explanation for the mummy in this episode being kind of out of phase.
Yeah.
Although there were a couple of things that just really, you know, because they went without explanation, but it didn't explain certain things.
This episode reminded me a lot of Tom Baker era.
Yes.
Especially. I loved the doctor's
jelly baby.
Yeah, the little cigarette case. Different jelly babies. Yeah, have one. I loved that, but yeah, it reminded me a lot of the sort of Tom Baker era, where one of the things I liked most about Tom Baker was that he's odd enough for the part, and I think Capaldi is definitely settling into that.
Yeah, I'm really beginning to like Capaldi. I was a bit unsure on the first episode when he was kicking in.
It was always, he'll be brilliant, but let's see how the writing goes. And so far, the writing has been a bit crap this season. But, yeah, I've really liked it. The highlight has definitely been the Doctor.
Yes, I can agree with that. But I think the writing and the dialogue between the Doctor and the characters as well has been a lot better this season compared to last season, I think. And certainly Clara's not as annoying either. She seems to be actually becoming a person rather than just a flamboyant plot.
Smiley girl that, you know, wanders around being smiley.
Yeah.
I like her as a character now, which annoys me because, you know, she's, you know, with her being in, you know, the previous series, it was, I could really just take a leave her. So, you know, the whole, she may leave at the end of this season. I was thinking, well, good, hopefully we'll get someone interesting. And then, unfortunately, almost from, you know, the first episode, I found her character far more interesting when interacting with Capaldi. And he was like, oh, bollocks. I don't want to leave now.
I want to move us on, if that's okay, to our feature, which we're going to end up talking about more telly anyway, so it's fine. We're going to now revisit a subject that we kind of looked at a bit in episode 77 earlier in the year.
Name the episode.
Basically, we're sort of looking at like telly returning and stuff. And the past couple of weeks, a lot of stuff has been announced to be either returning to TV or coming back in different formats to what it was originally known as. So, obviously, last week we mentioned that Twin Peaks is coming back, but that's coming back as a TV series, I believe 9 episodes on Showtime. Mm-hmm. So obviously that's happened. Then last week, Fallout Lost in Space is probably heading back to TV.
Which is,
courtesy of the people that wrote Dracula Untold. So I'm not sure how that works, because I've heard bad things about Dracula Untold, so I don't know how that happened whatsoever. Then and also like a Little House on the Prairie is being turned into a film.
Oh God, I hate it. That was a bane of my Sunday dinner, Sunday lunch times. Oh Jesus.
Cookie.
Along with the Waltons.
Yeah. Sunday. God.
Little House on the Prairie and then Waltons.
So that's happening. And then on the TV to comics front, I was surprised and ecstatic to find out that Millennium is coming back as a comic miniseries next year, tying in with the X-Files Season 10 comic book series, and it's got Joe Harris writing, Chris Curtis behind it, in the sense of like being on board for the story and that, and that is looking like it's going to be great. It's not what I want, though. And I hope
new series.
And I hope it's not as mixed as X-Files Season 10 has been quality.
It does make me think, because there's a lot of new TV series starting that is based on other stuff. I mean, not only have you got these cults coming back, but you've also got, you know, the comic book, you know, the amount of comic book series, you know, coming out. And it's because usually with TV shows, they try and pit them against each other, and usually the loser ends up basically pissing off. Are we going to see the same thing with this, or do you reckon there'll be enough to, you know, kind of splash out and go around?
I reckon a lot of the things will be complementary.
I should hope so. I mean, there's a few ones that I've noticed appearing on comic book format, which I'm thinking, no, why have you done that? Why? Saved by the Bell, that's come back as a comic.
Yeah.
They might as well. Archie at this point.
Wait.
He's against the Predator.
Exactly.
Wait, hang on. Saved by the Bell.
As a comic.
He's coming back as a comic set in the 21st century.
Oh, bugger.
With Zach and the others. And then they did, which I'm actually quite intrigued by. I might pick it up at some point. But they've done Knight Rider versus Airwolf.
Yeah. There's silence there of stunned surprise.
It might surprise us.
I think in terms of things coming back as... Because Lost in Space was originally a TV series. I am remembering this correctly, aren't I?
Yeah, I remember it, and yeah. I thought it was crap.
And for it to come back as...
Land of the Giants.
For it to come back as a TV series, it's like...
Lost in Space was not as crap as Land of the Giants. Land of the Giants was shit.
I think we need a scale of badness from you, isn't it? Crap, shit.
Well, let's shouldn't see. Exist. I think, Land of the Giants is maybe on par with Joel Schumacher Batman's.
Oh dear.
And it's just bad.
But like I said, I'm kind of surprised with Lost in Space coming back as a TV series, considering the number of sci-fi shows that have been out recently. That have been kind of here and there with like the actual viewing figures.
Yeah, but I like that we're gonna have another show that's actually kind of sci-fi and set in space.
I like sci-fi series, and I will watch it, and it will probably be bad, but I'll watch it just to.
And to be fair, I actually quite like the Matt LeBlanc film. Lost in Space.
I actually saw that in the cinema.
That had its moments.
And I absolutely loved...
That was a weird film.
I loved the single that they came up with it, which was like the theme remixed with all the... It was sped up and...
Yeah, was it such and such 440 or something?
Yeah, that was good. But I think the Little House on the Prairie coming back as a film, that's interesting because it's like, was going to have to be a reimagining of the series because... And I'm spoiling a... 31-year-old TV series, right? But at the end of Little House on the Prairie, the town gets blown to Kingdom Come.
How about he just doesn't get fucking made?
Well, you
can that just happen in the pilot? Maybe if it's post-apocalyptic, you know, the little house on the prairie, you know, translated to in a little house on the minefield.
But basically what I'm saying is that they couldn't call it Little House on the Prairie and have it as a continuation of the TV series, which means that, because it'd be like, well, if it had any sense, it'd be 30-odd years after, but then how can you really call it Little House on the Prairie after what happened to all the poor characters? You wouldn't have to bring back the same actors, but it's right. What happened to the characters.
And that's the people that bought up the thingy, the land that, you know, was there, basically rebuilt their home. Just as a kind of middle finger
actually,
to the
Prairie. Well, then you know what? It's just gonna take a leaf out of the Westworld TV series that's being made at the moment, and it's gonna be filled with robots.
No, I think it should be continuing, you know, from the Little House on the Prairie TV series. But then they discover that the whole place is built on an ancient Native American burial ground,
and they're all gruesomely
killed. Again, that could happen in the pilot.
But it's meant to be a film. I just think it's going to make for a really... I just think it's going to make for a really dull film, because it's not quite a Western, but it's not obviously really anything superbly historical, but at the same time, it's more Western than anything else. And the Western genre at the moment, I'm not sure if anyone's noticed, but it's a bit dead!
Well,
it's not popular at the moment.
Well, wasn't it meant to be like popular in like the 50s, 60s?
Yeah, and then in the 70s it began to kind of die out, because
if I remember right, well, say remember rightly, as though I was actually there, I wasn't
this
born.
This is your film theory.
Well, I don't think it was even film theory. I think it's basically just general kind of theory and whatnot. Basically, there was a time when most primetime TV shows were Westerns because it was so popular, and then all of a sudden people got sick of it because
they just died.
I think the last
there's no room though for a good Western. If they do a good Western, i.e. not Little House on the Prairie,
Deadwood.
I think Deadwood. Yeah,
Little House on the Prairie, just outside of Deadwood, and have Al Swearengen back again. Oh, that'd be great.
Or Red Dead Redemption, the movie. That'd be cool.
Yes, there we go.
See, I think
Western sorted.
The last sort of like hoorah of the Western genre generally was all the sort of like Fistful of Dollars. Yeah, Clint.
What about Django Unchained?
I'm saying like when the films were originally popular, that period.
Yeah, I'd agree
with that. It would be the Clint Eastwood sort of that around of.
Oh, yeah.
Of
and then I would say Unforgiven was kind of a revisit. Yeah.
Because the thing is that certainly most of the Westerns that have come back since have either been crime capers of a sort, have looked at somehow, obviously in the, was it 80s, 90s, what's the one with Kiefer Sutherland in?
Was it Young Guns or something?
Yeah, you had stuff like that. Yeah. And
Young Guns 2. Yeah.
And Billy the Kid type thing as well. Mm. Which had people's in it. You had that kind of thing, but it wasn't as popular as it was in its heyday. And then you've had more recent things, like, obviously Deadwood is a series, TV series, but then like The 3:10 to Yuma.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that. Brokeback Mountain is a cowboy film, sort of, but it took a very different path.
I saw The 3:10 replacement bus service to Yuma.
what was that one with mine's gone blank.
What are you thinking?
Tumbleweed. I'm thinking Jeff Bridges and
Tombstone.
That's recent. Tombstone, isn't it?
Well, the one that I'm thinking of is recent, but I don't think it's that.
That was a similar sort of vintage.
They remade True Grit.
That's the one that I was thinking of, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I've watched that remake and I've watched the original. But going back to sort of cult TV, I suppose since Deadwood, nobody successfully brought Western TV series, Cowboys, back to the small screen. And I'm kind of hoping that I mean, Deadwood was good. I don't think you're going to currently be able to top that. It's just... I think with Millennium coming... Pardon?
Have you seen today's announcement as well, that that new movie series, City of Bones, that came out last year?
Was it the Immortal... Mortal Bones or whatever. Yeah, it's come back as a TV series.
Yeah.
Because it kind of flopped as they saw it, flopped in the cinemas as far as the studios were concerned. So they think it will work as young adult series. I suppose they need something to replace stuff like the Tomorrow People remake.
So that they need to replace it. The amount of stuff that's actually, they're doing now.
I think it would be great if maybe just, everyone drank lots of alcohol.
You know,
and
what
then,
really,
forget it ever happened.
You know what really disheartens me? Is the fact that America has so much new, kind of dramas and adaptations and remakes and whatnot.
And then Utopia gets cancelled.
Yeah, we've got stuff being cut down. We've got stuff like, was it Fades, that were, absolutely brilliant. I won awards, and that got shut down.
Yeah, thank you, British TV industry. You seem to keep shitting on yourselves.
Meanwhile, we keep getting substandard episodes of Doctor Who.
Yeah, and also, we've still got, like, the 12th season or whatever of this reality TV show. Or like X Factor, or Strictly Come Dancing, or whatnot, and it's really really disheartening.
Very cheap to make.
Yeah.
Another series. I was trying to think. Trying to remember. Anyone remember The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.?
No. Yeah.
Oh, you need to see that then.
Uh oh.
Because it's Dad Bruce Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was elements of sci-fi in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really is worth watching, worth picking up, because it has one or two wobbly episodes, but yeah, it by far makes up for it in the fact that it is truly a cult series, and that deserves longer.
I just want to say, I think the reason I was inspired to get us to talk about this week was because within the same week of like Twin Peaks being announced. Well, I like Twin Peaks. For me, Millennium is more important to me personally. And just to hear that it was like, oh, it's coming back as a comic series. I'm like, I would prefer the mini TV series. But, trying to get, because obviously you've got to get Fox to agree.
They won't agree to anything.
The stupid thing is, they've only got so much longer that they can use the amazing Lance Henriksen. I love him dearly as an actor, but he's getting on a bit.
He's one of those actors whose acting career started at a certain stage, and I think in a way he's been lucky enough because he hasn't kind of been like a young actor that has kind of suddenly stopped getting roles and has kind of.
He's always had that slightly grizzled look to him, basically.
I mean, that's kind of the thing that happened with Matt LeBlanc and with Episodes, is the fact that, he starred, in Friends, and then he had the hit, thing with Joey, and then nothing, and they're kind of bringing him back, and that's kind of a core focus, is the fact that they've got this one kind of old actor who's, and they're kind of playing with that in the series.
But I would like a Millennium mini series as a TV series. I don't think it'd be realistic to expect them to do a huge film, but like a 3 to 9 episode mini series would be kind of appropriate.
That'd be good.
You know what I want?
A Millennium Falcon.
Sorry.
So if you get a Millennium Falcon, you can let me fly it for a couple of days.
Or just sit next to you going that's just the TIE fighters going by.
Has anyone else got anything to say about this subject?
Yep. If you're going back to the British TV thing, I've got an idea that would probably anger most people, but I think it's cool.
Was it Saffron Steel? Shows,
nope. You get rid of EastEnders, Carnation Street, Emmerdale, Hollyoaks.
I support this so far, yes.
Yeah.
Don't replace them with anything.
Casualty, casualty, and then you use the money saved from that to build, to actually do the original series or new series of Utopia and stuff.
I'm sorry, I don't think, even though I'm not a casualty fan, I don't agree with equating it to the same level as EastEnders and Emmerdale and that, because it is an ongoing drama series rather than necessarily a soap opera.
I remember when I was a kid, it used to have like breaks in it so that, you know, that you wouldn't get like another casualty episode for like a couple of months down the road, and then it will start up again. So it's more like a serial in that way. Well, series.
Let them have casualty. Just get rid of all the soaps.
Well, and Doctors has to stay. Yeah. And Doctors has to stay as well. Doctors and Casualty actually have some good writing going on. I wouldn't say necessarily acting, but it's a good teething ground for a lot of drama writers, is what I'm saying. Technically,
is this where I point out that as an example of that kind of thing, JMS, Mr. Straczynski, who went on to do Babylon 5, etc., cut his teeth doing quite a lot of Murder, She Wrote.
Yep.
Mm.
Yeah. Cool. But now, what happens with certain soap operas? I'm less concerned about soap operas and more the continuing to supply reality TV shows to this country and my TV license going on paying for rights to show sports.
Yeah,
I think in general we are fairly underrepresented when it comes to, you know, kind of demographics that, you know, watching TV.
Yeah, whatnot.
Family Guy and BBC Three does not make up for
no.
In fact, that is quite an awful series nowadays. So yeah,
and I don't mind kind of reality TV in terms of kind of documentaries and whatnot, as long as they've, you know, got a point to them.
Yeah, next fighting just ugh. But I think I'm going to wind this down for this episode and go. We'll
wind it up, by the way.
Wind it up, wind it down.
Wind it all around.
But yeah, that is all we've got time for this week. So it's goodbye from.
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul, aka Cookie. You can find me on Twitter @onearmed_cookie.
And it's good night from me, Paul Blurt, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlurt.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter @EK6891. Geeky knitting experiments.tumblr.com is still going and has amazing stuff. You can find Nerd Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or on Twitter at Nerd Podcast. Plus, you can find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerd Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out hexdimension.com and our Twitter feeds in the coming days if you want to win stuff. Of course you want to win stuff. Obviously want to win stuff.
Quite some, fairly good horror films as well.
And the book looks like it's going to be hilarious, and I can assure you The Vanishing of Ethan Carter is awesome. So keep an eye and enter, participate. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.